had my final surgery. A week later, I came in for a post-op visit and really was not feeling well at all. There was another infection in the leg, which I had been dealing with on and off for a year. That night I went septic and almost had the complete near-death experience. I ended up in the hospital in rather dubious condition. My brother, my youngest brother, who was with me when I hit the hospital, was afraid that I wasn't going to pull through that night. I mean, my condition when I hit the emergency room was pretty dire. And so they stabilized me for 4 days. And at the end of 4 days, I was stable enough that there was really an option. It was life or limb. And obviously, I chose life. And as a result, I lost my right leg at the knee. So anyway, that's what kept me away. And part of it during that time was the medications that they had me on had totally wiped out my immune system to where I couldn't be around anyone. I was pretty much confined to home. And so that was really why I didn't attend. But now kind of moving forward, before I really get into my story, I want to take a moment to acknowledge Martin and Craig, who really put in countless hours trying to keep this chapter going. I mean, they really deserve a very well done. I mean, without them, you wouldn't be here tonight. This chapter would have died. I really want to thank the two of them, especially, and Dave Larson as well. Not only were we dealing with the stress of the pandemic, but I went down medically and we lost a beloved board member and somebody who put in just countless hours in editing recordings and making sure that the recordings was put up, and that was Bob Little. And, you know, in his absence, I would really like to thank Bob for the time that he put in here as well. But anyway, now kind of moving back in time again, how I became involved with IANS was really with the very first meeting that was held here. At that time, it was held out at Cottonwood Hospital. I believe the first meeting had about 15 people. And the reason that I attended was I had had this experience that was the most profound thing that had ever happened to me. And when I heard that they were having this meeting with an organization called IANS about near-death experiences, I went not for validation, but to see if other people had had this experience, because I knew what had happened to me was very real and really had changed my life in many, many ways. So at that time, I went to the first meeting. I met Martin and Arvin Gibson, who was one of the other founding members, who has since passed. A tremendous individual. He was a great author, but also very committed to the organization. And that's the rest of the story. I spent the next 30 plus years being involved with IANS until I had my medical issue here a couple of years ago. So anyway, now as far as my experience goes, I'm really very fortunate in my experience that I actually had someone very close to me. My cousin Tom, who's here tonight, was very much a part of my experience, but also was able to validate it for me. And so might be available if anybody needs to talk to him at the end of the meeting. In July 26th of 1991, my brother and I had gone to St. Anthony, Idaho. We had taken our off-road vehicles up there to go to the sand dunes up there. We had spent many, many weekends down here in the sand dunes, and we had heard that the sand dunes in St. Anthony, Idaho were really something to experience. So we went up there. We arrived in St. Anthony. We set up our camp, tents and everything. And Bob and I went on our vehicles to explore the area. And having never been up there, we were just kind of doing a reconnaissance of where we would like to ride over the next few days that we were going to be up there. We had been out for probably an hour or so exploring, and Bob had his son with him. And I had a guest with me as well, and told Bob we really needed to head back and check on them, and then we could go out later that day or the following day. Bob was ahead of me, and still to this day, I'm not really sure what happened. But the sand up in the St. Anthony, Idaho is unique in the sense it's more like a powder than a sand, and it can conceal a lot of things underneath the sand that you normally wouldn't experience in the sand that we have down here. And the only thing I can think is I must have hit one of those. But Bob was ahead of me. I hit something. I was thrown from my vehicle. I landed on my head. The vehicle apparently must have gone airborne and flipped, but it came down and landed on top of me. So I had two significant injuries as a result of being thrown. When I first hit my head, they said that I had a compression fracture at my T4 level of my spine, as well as a burst fracture. They feel that was when I was thrown and went down and hit on my head. And then I had crush injuries from the vehicle actually landing on top of me. Those injuries were quite significant. I was unconscious initially, and Bob apparently realized I was no longer behind him and came back looking for me. When he did, he found me lying face down with the vehicle on top of me, unconscious. And because of the weight of the vehicle and everything, he really was unable to get it off of me. And we were kind of out in the middle of nowhere. I came to long enough that I recall the conversation that Bob and I had. He said, do you know what happened? And I said, no. And he said, do you realize your vehicle's on top of you? And I said, I have no idea. I said, I can't feel anything. And, you know, I can't move anything. And Bob said, well, I've got to go get some help. And I said, I remember telling him, I said, yeah, please do. And I said, because I can't move and I don't know if any other people are going to show up, can you, if you can find some rocks or something, put them around my body so that I'm immobilized, and then if somebody comes up, they'll know not to try to move me just yet. And so he did that, left, and apparently came across another group of people that were out there. They came back, were able to get the vehicle off me. One of their members went into the camp area where we were at and notified the paramedics. The paramedics came out. I'm not sure how long it took for them to get out there, but they came out. They were trying to stabilize me, and they had to call a helicopter in to remove me from where I was at. I was kind of in and out of consciousness. I remember hearing that the helicopter was 29 minutes out. And that was really the last thing I remember until I regained consciousness again in the Eastern Idaho Regional Medical Center. And when I was there, apparently they had run a bunch of tests. And I'm going to kind of give you an outline of what the injuries were. I had a closed head injury. I had a cervical injury to my spine, which had made me totally paralyzed at that point. I had a burst fracture at T5, a compression at T4. All of my ribs were broken. I had developed a pneumothorax and a hemothorax in my lungs. And due to the amount of blood that was going into my left lung, they had real serious concern that I had torn an aorta in my heart. And they wanted to do open heart surgery to go in and try to correct the bleeding. And I recall talking with the doctor, and I said, well, if you don't do surgery, what's going to happen? He said, well, you're going to die. And I told him very matter of fact, not because I was being heroic, but I knew the situation I was in. I was paralyzed. And the thought of being paralyzed at that time was more frightening than dying. And so I told him, no, you can't do surgery. And because they were not a level one trauma center and really didn't have the capability to deal with all of my injuries and my declining condition, I needed to be airlifted to a trauma one medical center. My brother had arrived by this time, and they, I guess, were discussing with him on where I needed to go. And the two options were Boise or Salt Lake. Well, being from the Salt Lake area, obviously, the decision was made to fly me to Salt Lake City. So an air ambulance was dispatched up there. I was flown to Salt Lake City. Well, as a result of the trauma that I had sustained, I was developing some pretty significant secondary complications, one of which was actually probably the thing that would have taken my life more than the injuries I had, and that was ARDS, which is acute respiratory distress syndrome. And at the time that I had developed ARDS, the mortality rate was north of 90%. And what happens with ARDS is the lung sacs fill up with fluid. You're not able to get oxygen to any of your vital organs, and your vital organs just shut down. And I also was developing pneumonia and some other complications. Well, as a result of all of the injuries, the secondary complications, I had gone into a coma. My brother Bob had come down on the air ambulance with me and really was feeling very helpless at that point in time. My mother was living in California. My youngest brother was living in Puerto Rico at that time, and it was just Bob, and he really didn't know what to do. They had told him that there was a very good chance that I was not going to survive. And so Bob contacted my cousin Tom, and my brother's brother-in-law, and asked if they could come up to the hospital and give me a blessing. And Tom and Lance came up to the hospital to give me a blessing. At that time, I was in a deep coma. I mean, medically, I was kind of on my way out. But as Tom and Lance were giving me the blessing, I could feel their hands on me. I could hear what they were saying, but I was hearing it from an elevated position and seeing it, and I was really confused, because as they were giving me the blessing and I could feel their hands on me and I could hear what was being said, people were gathering around me. And what I guess I should say is they were people in the sense that they were in a spirit form. Some I knew, all were familiar to me, but many of them I didn't know. But they knew me, and there was a moment there where there was a recognition between them and I that, you know, we were connected somehow. And as they gathered around me, they were placing their hands on me as the blessing was being given. And I felt at that moment just totally at peace. I felt very comforted. And the only thing that I could really gather from that was that they were, they, to me, what was registering is they were healing hands, that they were there for the purpose of healing as this blessing was being given. And as I said, I was in an elevated position and I was looking down, and it was really very, very confusing because it wasn't registering how I could see what was going on. And at first I didn't recognize the body down there as mine, but I could also feel everything that was going on. And that was kind of the last thing I remember of that part of the experience. Well, I was in a coma for several weeks. And during the period that I was in the coma, it was just kind of up and down day by day. I mean, there, my mom and my brothers had said they had been called multiple times and said, you know, if you need to say your goodbyes, you probably better do it because we don't think he's going to pull through. And so it was really very stressful on them. My second part of the experience, I believe, happened really towards the end of me being comatose. Up to this point in time, the things that they were doing medically just really weren't turning anything around. I mean, my condition was continuing to deteriorate. And my understanding that there were conversations with the family at different points that, A, I probably wouldn't survive, and if I did, there was a very good chance that I would be institutionalized for the rest of my life. And they just had encouraged them to have conversations about removing me from life support. And the next thing that I remember is finding myself in this incredibly beautiful meadow. There were flowers and trees, and I was on a stone pathway, a dirt stone pathway that was going down a slight slope. And at the bottom of this slope, there was a stone archway. And coming out of this stone archway, there was an inviting warm light, a white light that was drawing me down there. And as I was on this path, I was amazed by everything around me seemed to be interconnected. The grass, the flowers, the trees, all seemed to be communicating with me and me communicating back with them. It was really like nothing was at a higher or lower level. Everything was at the same level and interconnected. And I was just really mesmerized by the beauty and the sense of peace and tranquility that I was feeling there. But then as I went farther down the path, I felt a tremendous loss within me. And the loss that I was feeling was that I knew that I was either dead or I was in the process of dying. And I felt like I was never going to be able to tell my children that I loved them. And it just was tremendous heartache. Prior to my accident, I mean, I was a loving father, but I wasn't really a hands-on father. In other words, I wasn't telling my children that I loved them and hugging them. I mean, I, you know, if my kids would say, well, you know, if they ever questioned love, I would say, well, how can you doubt that I love you? Look at everything that I have given you, you know, because I gave them everything they ever wanted. But the one thing that they really needed and wanted was me. And I was kind of absent a lot of times in that respect emotionally. And so having that feeling that I was never going to be able to truly tell my kids that I loved them was really very painful. And as I continued down the pathway and I went into through the stone archway, it was a beautiful garden. You know, it had a stone flooring to it. There was plants and just very, very beautiful. And straight ahead of me was my dad. And my dad just looked wonderful. I mean, he was in the prime of his life and he was just emanating this glow about him. My dad had died 6 years prior to my accident. And I moved forward and my dad approached me and he embraced me. And I told him, I said, I'm really feeling lost and confused. And the feeling of lost was really not quite sure where I was at, what was going on. And the confusion was about, you know, what's really going to happen to me. And I knew what I had left. And I left a body that was pretty much totally destroyed. And it was a very frightening prospect to think of returning to that body. And my dad just embraced me. And he told me, he said, you are no longer going to be lost or confused. It's not your time to be with me now. When it is, I'll be here. You need to go back now. And at that time, we moved back towards the archway. And the next thing that I recall was waking up. I was still on a ventilator in the hospital, had tubes everywhere. And my youngest brother and my mother were there. And they were trying to communicate with me. And I remember communicating to them that, you know, they were saying, are you okay? Are you okay? And I remember just saying, I'm fine. I've been with Dad. And I really, you know, I mean, if you kind of look at it from a different perspective, you probably, if somebody that had been in my situation had said that to their family member, you'd think they'd be hitting the call button. Get somebody in here quick. This guy is wigged out. But they really accepted it as it was. And the thing that was really amazing, and my cousin, if you want, I can get him up here and he can maybe speak to it. But after I regained consciousness and they were allowing more people to come in, I had people I hadn't seen for years and years, and people that really didn't know me that came there based on knowing someone. But for several weeks after I regained consciousness, I was told that there was kind of an aura around me and that I was overwhelmed by the people that were coming. I thought they were coming, you know, they were coming to, you know, wish me well and to visit. But really what a lot of them were saying is they said, we're not here for you. You are here for us. It's what we are getting out of coming to visit with you that's really so amazing. I mean, I guess for the lack of a better term is, for a long period of time there, it was like I had one foot in and one foot out. I was kind of vacillating between these two realms. And in terms of my children, and you know, this experience was really transformative. And I mean, I know how it affected me. I mean, I think that, you know, my cousin and other people that have known me all my life can probably speak more to how it actually did change me. I mean, it was literally an overnight event. I mean, it was just almost as soon as I regained consciousness, I mean, I looked the same, but I wasn't the same person as prior to my experience. And I know my children probably thought that it was a remake of the Body Snatchers. You know, they were like, looks like my dad, sounds like my dad, but him, you know, telling us he loves us and wants us to hold him and hug him and everything, we're not used to this, you know. But I mean, it was a beautiful experience. I mean, to have that connection. And I believe that well, not believe, I know that the experience really gave me the strength to deal with the challenges that I had ahead of me as a result of my injuries. I was hospitalized for a year. For the first about 6.5 months, I was flat on my back. I was not able to even sit up. One of the other complications that I had developed was traumatic pancreatitis. And because of the pancreatitis and the other injuries, they were not able to do any surgery to stabilize me. So I had to be left completely immobilized. I had a brace on my neck called a Minerva so that it just kept my head back and I couldn't move or do anything other than move my eyes. And then I was in what they call a TSLO brace that went from my neck down to my hips front and back and kept me from moving my back at all. And they essentially had to let the spine fuse itself because they couldn't go in and fuse it. So that's kind of a little bit of my experience. There was a third part that happened when I was in the hospital up in Seattle in the spinal cord center. And during that time, I was feeling some bitterness over what had happened to me. And really pretty depressed. My world was really what I could see straight ahead of above me. I mean, I could tell you how many holes were in the panels and the ceilings of the hospital, but that was about, you know, the sum total of my world was just what I could see ahead of me. And this one night, I was lying there, and like I said, I just really was feeling very, very depressed. And I was feeling pretty angry with God at that moment. And I said, how could you do this to me? You know, how could you do this? And a voice came back and said, why would you think that I would do this to you? You know, you're a parent, you're a father. You understand that your children, you know, you can love them, you can protect them, you can teach them, you can do all of these things. But in the end, your children are going to have to make choices. And some of those choices are going to bring you great joy. Some are going to bring you great pain. And that the two gifts that we have are the gift of free agency and the gift of love. Those are probably the two greatest gifts that we're given. And because of that free agency, you know, it was an epiphany for me at that moment. But, you know, I had made a choice to be doing what I was doing. And as a result of that choice, I was severely injured. And that, you know, I have never blamed anyone. I've never looked back. I have never doubted God. I mean, prior to my accident, I had had a religious upbringing. I mean, my father was Catholic. My mother was Methodist. And so I had exposure to both them. But I really wasn't a religious person at the time that I had my accident. After my accident, I really developed a very strong relationship with God. And I'm not a religious person, but I consider myself really a very spiritual person. And that has really sustained me for all of these years. And I believe gotten me through some very difficult times. And, you know, for those of you that are familiar with the near-death experience and those of you that are new, I mean, oftentimes people think that, you know, when you've had a near-death experience for some reason that, you know, your life is blessed and that, you know, you're going to have this great productive life from that point on. Well, the truth is your challenges are just beginning. You know, I mean, I've had many, many challenges. since I had my accident. But the one thing that I've always had is my faith. And it sustained me and it's gotten me through some really difficult times. And that's kind of my experience. And here I am today. So I thank you. And if anybody has any questions, I'll be happy to answer the questions.
Question?
You were raised a Christian.
I'm sorry.
I say you were raised a Christian.
Yes.
Did you see any angelic or?
No.
For example.
Okay. He asked if I was raised Christian. I said yes, and asked if I saw any deities or angelic figures in my experience. No. The only person that I came in contact with was my dad. And as I've indicated before, prior to coming in contact with my dad in that meadow that I was in, going down the pathway, everything was really interconnected. I mean, it was unbelievable.
Who was that voice that spoke to you in Seattle?
You know, I have an opinion. I mean, to me, it was God talking to me, you know, or Christ. It could have been either one. I mean, I knew that it was a divine being that was talking to me and that was, you know, pointing out that, you know, they loved me and that, no, they did not bring me any harm. It was that, you know, through the free agency that we were given here, that, you know, things happen.
Did you have a life review?
No, I did not.
My question is, how old were your children? How did this change your relationship with them?
They were still pretty young. My youngest was 2. And I think we're probably 2, 10 and maybe 12 at that time. And the relationship changed really very dramatically. I mean, I really bonded with them. And, you know, the relationship was really based upon what I could give them. And what I mean by that, it was of giving them myself, of, you know, including them in my life and me being included in their life and letting them know that I loved them and how important they were. And to this day, I have a great relationship with my children and now grandchildren.
Thank you. I had a lot of questions, but I'll limit it to just one. I was just curious if you would care to elaborate a little bit more on this interconnectedness experience that you have.
Well, what I mean by that is that as I found myself in this meadow, everything was alive and vibrant, and it was communicating. I mean, communication was going back and forth between me and the grass and the trees and the sky, the pathway. Everything seemed to be alive and communicating.
Well, you're definitely an inspiration. Thank you for sharing your story. My question for you is, if you had not had this accident, would your faith be as strong?
You know, I don't believe so. You know, faith is kind of an elusive thing. I know for me, and I think for many of us, you know, because it's not tangible. And what I mean by that is, you know, you can't feel faith, you can't see it. You can't be low on it and go, well, I'm going to go to the faith store and get some more. You know, I mean, it's something within us. And even though I had had a religious upbringing, you know, to where I had a belief in God and Christ, and but I really had nothing tangible to kind of put my faith into. You know, I mean, it was pretty much what I had been told, nothing that I had experienced. And I think really kind of the first sense that I had that there was probably more to our life and the ending of our life was when I was with my dad when he passed away. And at the moment that he had passed away, there was a clear sense that he had left, what his essence was, had left. And that something really very special had just occurred with him at the time of his death. My dad had cancer, and at the end of his life, there was really a struggle. I mean, it was kind of a prolonged death for him. And at the time that he died, I mean, I knew something very special had just happened, and I knew that my dad was okay, you know, but I really didn't have anything to really hang my hat on in terms of faith in that regard. I mean, it was just kind of like, well, something just happened. What was it? And it really wasn't until I had my experience that I clearly understood what faith meant and, you know, how it affected me. And that even though it isn't tangible in the sense that it's not something you can see or feel, I mean, it's something when you have it, it resides very deeply within you. And it's been something that I've been able to rely on ever since I had my accident. You know, it's pulled me through. And because I had a near death experience, I'm still human. You know, I still had doubts at times. I still struggled at times. I still had anger at times. But when I had those moments, I was able to kind of tap back in to what had happened to me, and it would get me through those difficult times.
We have a couple of questions online. One says, you didn't mention a wife. Were you married at the time of your accident? And if so,
no, I was divorced at the time I had my accident. I'm still divorced. Have a good relationship with my ex. She has since remarried.
And how did she deal with challenges, especially during your first year?
Well, really, I think for a lot of my family, it was difficult for them because I had been injured in Vietnam. I had a service connection through the VA, and therefore my spinal cord care was picked up by the VA, and I was flown from Salt Lake to Seattle, Washington. So for a year, I was up in the Seattle area. They did come up and visit and everything, but you know, we were really separated by about 1,000 miles. And so it was difficult for my kids, I think more so than for my wife, but my ex-wife, my children, my extended family, all were very, very supportive. My mother had come up to visit me from California. My brother, who was a pilot and Coast Guard at the time in Puerto Rico, had come back when I was initially injured, but also had flown in to the Seattle area to visit me. Tom's younger brother, Jim, who I was very close to, and sadly he has since passed. Jim came up to Seattle to see me a few times. And so I had a lot of support that way.
Thank you for sharing your experience. I was wondering, when you were first in the hospital, you said you saw some spirits around you laying their hands. Have you had any indication of who they were, or have you had any feelings about that?
Well, as I said, some of them were familiar. And what I mean by familiar, some were known as grandparents. Some were other relatives that I had known, you know, prior that had died. and others were familiar, but I didn't really know them. I mean, I knew they were familiar to me. I mean, in other words, it was like coming into a room where you know everybody in there, even though you haven't seen them for quite a while. Like I said, some were very familiar. They were all familiar, but in different ways.
Take this one here, then.
You mentioned that there was a priesthood blessing given to you.
Yes.
How does that religion particularly play a part? Who are the members of the church and your family?
Well, my extended family is LDS. My immediate family, with the exception of one brother, we're not LDS. I always tease my cousin, Tom, who's here tonight, who gave me the blessing. I always said, you know, you must have an 800 number to God or something. But my feelings are, is that whether it were Tom or someone else that came in and gave me the blessing, you know, or a blessing at that time, I think that it was very much, I was in need of a connection, you know, with God. I was in, you know, kind of a desperate strait at that point in time. And I feel that, you know, Tom and Lance facilitated that through the blessing. So, and in terms of, I think the other part of your question about religion is, I personally feel that there are many roads that lead to God, you know, through many different religions. And I mean, my experience hasn't taken me back to a specific religion, but I respect and honor all of them. I feel that anything that gets you closer to God is the path that you should probably be on.
Question about God. I have a question about God. You believe, apparently, that there is a life after this life that we'll all go to. Is that true?
Well, it's not, yes, I absolutely do believe. I mean, the one thing that the experience did for me is that it removed my fear of death, and it answered a lot of questions. I mean, you know, I think I struggled, probably like most of us do, is what happens when you die? I mean, is that the end of it? Do we just become dust or what? And for me, what the experience did is it gave me an insight that there is more once we do die, and that really all our body is down here on earth is the vehicle that gets who we really are around. That, you know.
The question is, what is God to you, or what did you take away from that as God being? Is he some spiritual essence, or
did you? Well, to me,
personal experience.
Well, to me, what God represents is not only a creator, but a father, a loving father to all of us. And that we were given the gift of life, this mortal life, with the understanding that because of the nature of being human, that there were going to be challenges, there were going to be, you know, gains, there were going to be losses, there was going to be love, there was going to be hate, there was going to be suffering, and that God gave us the opportunity to come here and to experience things that in a perfected form we couldn't or wouldn't. And so my experience of God is, you know, not only in him being the creator and a loving father, but someone that is with us all the time and is around us all the time. You know, that in everything we see and experience, I think you can say that, you know, it is from or with God. Yes.
You mentioned that Tom on the that he might have some insight or some things to share supporting what you're telling. I'd like to hear that.
Well, when I you know, if Tom wouldn't mind coming up, I think probably, and we can keep it brief because I know you're probably running some time constraints, but I think Tom can kind of give you an insight into before and after and what he experienced maybe during the blessing and what they experienced after I came to. Yes.
I guess he always ropes me into this. I remember I didn't know he had an accident, and we were going to take our kids to Disneyland, and I called my Aunt Roseanne. Our mothers were sisters, by the way, and that's how we're related. And I called my Aunt Roseanne to see about staying with her. We went to Disneyland. She says, absolutely, but I won't be there. Bill was in a terrible accident last night, and I'm coming up there to see him. And that's the first I heard of it. And it's interesting because I grew up in an LDS family. I don't want to electrocute myself. But
we both
and I have rotator cuffs. That's not. But anyway, it's interesting. The first person that called me and wanted me to give Bill a blessing was his grandmother Mary, who's a very devout Catholic. And she knew that, you know, I was LDS, but she said, I want you to go give Bill a blessing because he needs all the help he can get. And of course, I gladly did that. And I think his brother Bob, we arranged and went up there and gave it to him. But the blessing for me wasn't unusual, and I did not have Bill's experience. My experience was observing what happened after we gave him the blessing. And, you know, I got home from that trip in California. When we left, I'd been up to visit him. He was in the VA hospital. And the nurse there said, he's going to come. He's on the way out. He's going to come out, you know, gain consciousness in the next 3 to 4 days. And we were gone about a week. And when I got home, the phone would ring. And Bill wants to see you. Like he said, he thought I had an 800 number to help. And I don't. Trust me, I don't. But my observation, his experience was his experience. And he asked me how many people were in the room. He wanted to know that right off the bat. We went to see him in the hospital. And I said, well, there was a nurse, Aunt Carol, your mom, Lance, and myself. Were you there, Teddy? I don't know why I can't remember that much back. And I said, that was it. And he says, no, the room was full of people and they all had their hands on me, helping heal me and give the blessing. And I did not feel that when that blessing was going on. That was his experience. But the one thing I noticed, like he said, being very materialistic and cars and clothes and all that stuff were really what was important to him. But the biggest surprise was when he came to and came back. He was a different person. Like he said, he was very loving. Materialistic things no longer mattered. And he was teaching us about how important it was to stay as unified as a family and love and support each other and everything. So I don't know what happened, but somewhere in that unconscious period when he was there and he had those experiences, in my opinion, there was a great deal of teaching and learning going on from, I don't know if it was from Father or from God, but he learned things there during that period. And that's the most dramatic thing that I saw, was a complete change in him. And it's still there. I mean, he's still the same way. You know, I mean, that materialistic stuff left. And his kids are very important to him. And our cousins, we've really got a pretty strong relationship with all our cousins in the family to this day. And but he taught us all a lot about that stuff after he had that experience.
So, Bill, there's a question online. Is your brother here, Bill?
No, he's not.
Okay. Another person asks, is there anything you wish people could understand about individuals who have experienced a near-death experience?
Oh, let me add one other little thing. When I went up to the hospital to see him, Bill wanted to see me, and his mother and his younger brother Tom were there. They were very shocked and concerned because Bill had told them that he'd been to see his dad. And that really surprised them. They were quite upset about it initially. And I think they sent a psychiatrist or a psychologist and said, you know, this is normal. People do have these experiences, but they were really shocked. They did not understand
when he came out of that coma and that happened.
What year was that?
What year was it?
1991.
We're so old now, we don't.
To answer the online question, the question was, what do people, what was it again, Craig?
What would you, is there anything you wish people could understand about individuals who have experienced a near-death experience?
Well, I think the first thing to remember, a near-death experience is just a glimpse. It's just a peek. Nobody has made the full journey. Well, you know, based upon your religious beliefs, you can say Christ, you know, made the full journey. You know, he lived a human life, died, was resurrected. But ever since then, I mean, anyone that has had a near-death experience has just had a peek. But what that glimpse has done, and I mean, there's millions and millions of people. I'm not unique by any means, you know. Millions of people have had this experience. But when you listen to all of these experiences and you put them together, there are common threads. And I think that what it really does is it gives us all some comfort to know that, you know, this isn't the end of the line for us. That, you know, when we leave this mortal body, we go to another place, and that we're going to be in a beautiful place. We're going to see those that we have lost and loved. And I think that that provides hope. The other part of that is we're still humans. You know, the thing you have to remember about the near-death experience is that you have the experience, which is really beyond description, and that anybody that's had an experience, including myself, struggles in trying to explain it to someone else, you know, because it's an experience that beyond anything you've ever had in your life. But yet that experience is burnt into your soul and into your mind. It remains pristine, whether it was yesterday or 100 years ago, it's still fresh as it was the day it occurred. I mean, you can always fall back on it. But then the second part of that is you have to integrate that into your life, your human life. And that's where you're probably going to get differing opinions and different explanations and descriptions of the experience, because that's going to be based upon your education, your religious belief, your social influences. Many, many human factors are going to come into play on how you actually try to understand and at times share that experience with others. So.
One more question. Okay, go
ahead. You mentioned that members of your family are of different religious faiths, churches, beliefs. I have read Betty Eady's book, Embraced by the Light, and she asked, when she was in the middle of her experience, she asked, why are there so many churches and so many religions in the world? And she was answered saying that they are for individuals' spiritual health according to the level of spiritual development which they have reached. The different churches, religions, faiths are to help people according to their level of spiritual development. Would you agree with that?
Well, you know, my opinion, again, it's my opinion, is that whatever brings you closest to God is the path. You know, and for some people, I mean, there are many, many faiths out there. And there are many people such as myself that, you know, are not practicing within an organized religion that have a very strong belief in God and a very strong faith. So I think the short answer again is whatever brings you closest to God is the path.
Well, so whatever's best for you,
right,
or any individual.
Yes.
Well, I believe that Heavenly Father loves all of us equally and unconditionally. And so that makes sense.
One last question, and then we'll wrap it up. One
more. So,
she's right there in the aisle.
Uh-oh.
Oh,
how about two?
You can have it. So, quick question. So, it was not your time to go. Your dad said such. Have you figured out why it was not your time? What is your mission? You figured out what your mission was, the reason you came back.
You know, I really haven't. You know, I think part of it is to reunite my family, which was, you know, pretty disjointed. I think that was part of it. I think another part of it was being involved in this organization and being able to reach out and help a lot of people. I mean, you know, besides IANS being an organization that educates people about the Native experience, an even bigger part, and a part that I've been really grateful that I've had the opportunity to take part in, is supporting people. I mean, for every person that's here, there's a different reason for being here. I mean, in the years that I've been involved with IANS, I've dealt with people that are facing their own mortality in a very short amount of time and are really struggling with, you know, what's going to happen. There are people that have lost loved ones, children, you know, beloved family members, close friends. And so I guess if I were to say, do I know what my mission is? No. But I think my mission, if you will, has been defined just by what's happened after my accident.
Okay. So what was the ultimate physical outcome of your accident?
I'm sorry, what was that?
What was the ultimate physical outcome of your accident?
Physical. How am I?
The ultimate physical outcome of your accident.
I know you said you were in the hospital for a year.
Okay.
So,
all right.
Have
well,
you been in a wheelchair since then, or what?
Yes. Okay. As a result of my accident, I'm a T4 paraplegic. In other words, I'm paralyzed from the chest down and have been since my accident. I was really very fortunate, as I mentioned at the beginning, when I was first injured, I had a cervical injury. That's an injury in the neck. And I was totally paralyzed. I couldn't move my arms or hands. And fortunately, that resolved over the weeks and months. When the feelings started to come back and the nerves were, you know, regenerating and that, I remember it was a nightmare. They had signs all over my room, don't touch his hands or arms. I mean, my nerves were so hypersensitive, just having somebody walk by felt like somebody had taken a blowtorch on my skin. But luckily that did resolve. And obviously I have the use of my hands and arms, and for that I'm very grateful. You know, there have certainly been struggles due to my paralysis. But I think for the most part, my life has really been very blessed. You know, I look at how my life was before the accident, and I look at my life since the accident. And I know it's probably difficult to understand, but I wouldn't change the person I am now for the person I was before, who at the time of the accident was training for a triathlon, very athletic, very good shape. You know, as my cousin said, I was very material. I was very successful. I had all of the things I wanted. I gave my kids all of the things I wanted. But my life was kind of vacant in many ways because I really didn't have those close, connected relationships that I think really are important to all of us.
Well, that's it.
Thank you, Bill. Feel free to come on up and talk to Bill.
We're ending our meeting online now. Thank you.
Great.